But today, instead of the latest wrinkle on the theory of how quantum computers and quantum information systems are meant to work, as this is a general theory conference, I thought I'd talk a little bit about some techniques that we're using, which may be applicable in other areas, may not be, don't know. So here's a generic sort of system that we're going to be dealing with in quantum computing. Two-level system, boink, boink. For reasons which are not going to be readily apparent, we call them S and D, referring to internal levels of a calcium ion rather than the generic 0 and 1. But don't worry about that. It's just the same concept, really. Two-level system. And we're going to hit this with some harmonic perturbation, which is going to be detuned from the resonance frequency, the exact resonance frequency for the two-level system, by an amount delta. The generic Hamiltonian should be omega there, but it looks like Mr. Gates has done a job on my PowerPoint. This is the generic sort of Hamiltonian that you get for this sort of system in the interaction picture, where you have some amplitude, some frequency, which is this thing which has been butchered here, the raising operator term, which is oscillating with frequency. And solving this in the interaction picture, you get the well-known sloshing back and forth of the probability amplitudes between the two levels. However, when this is really strongly detuned, what actually happens, as is well known for people who do this in quantum optics all the time, when this detuning is very large, you get virtually no population sloshing back and forth. What you end up getting is an effective frequency shift, which is called the AC Stark shift, alternating current Stark shift. It's kind of like you're putting an electric field. This amplitude omega squared here is proportional to the intensity of the electric field. It's kind of like the DC version of the Stark shift, and it's a frequency shift which is dependent on the square of the electric field amplitude. But it's now a time-varying field. So the question is, and what my this technique that I'm going to be describing, this effective Hamiltonian technique, is there an easy, straightforward, quick way to go from here to here without various tedious mucking around with adiabatic elimination of amplitudes in different levels, which is the generic way of calculating these things? And this sort of process turns out to be quite useful and quite applicable in various matters, in various problems in laser atom interaction that we are particularly interested in order to try and make an ion trap quantum computer work. So, generics. Let's think of a generic quantum system. We're not dealing with two-level systems anymore. We're dealing with any old system. The time evolution is described by a unitary time evolution operator, all which obeys the Schrödinger equation. This squiggly line, it seems, is h-bar. That's the Schrödinger equation describing how the time evolution operator works. It's usually the little hats that it butchers, but now this time it's h-bar for some reason. So we can solve, what we're going to be dealing with is a time-averaged evolution operator. We are going to posit the existence of a U with a bar over it, this being a the actual time evolution operator convoluted with some real-valued filter function, which is time invariant. Then we assume the existence of an effective Hamiltonian, which is the thing describing the evolution of this time-averaged version of the evolution operator. So here's that definition again. The time-averaging our original Schrödinger equation allows us immediately to write down an equation which this effective Hamiltonian must obey, in terms of the actual evolution operators and the interaction, the original interaction, non-filtered interaction Hamiltonian. So to solve this, to get any further with this, what we're going to do is write down a series solution for the time evolution operator in terms of some various operators V of T, which are defined iteratively in terms of the original interaction Hamiltonian, just standard Dyson series. And we're going to posit the existence of a similar series for the effective Hamiltonian. So we got one for the time evolution operator of the full problem, and the such a series for the effective Hamiltonian of the time, average dynamics. And writing those two series expansions down, inserting the averages as appropriate, you can pretty quickly derive a recursion relationship between the various terms of the Dyson series, the time average Dyson series, Vs with the overbars, and these terms describing the effective Hamiltonian. Specifically, that's writing down the previous equation again, for the first term, for the lambda is equal to zero term, you find that the first term in the interaction in the effective Hamiltonian is just the time average version of the original rapidly varying Hamiltonian. That's not really that surprising. The second term, again, just applying this series one after another, you get this expression, which, when rearranged a bit, gives you the next term in the series, which is kind of a bit more interesting, and it involves the interference between two terms, etc. You can go on and on and on. The paper that we're preparing, nearly ready to publish on this subject, we did it up to the fifth order, just for those of you who like to see the details. Okay, so combining these terms, and we're only going to keep the first two terms of this series, because we don't want to be too pedantic, we get this expression for the effective Hamiltonian, which is, as the sharp-eyed amongst you will have noticed, wrong. It's not Hermitian. It needs to be Hermitian. How do we make something Hermitian? Well, you just take the Hermitian part of it, like that, which is very easy to say. Actually, justifying that step is rather more difficult. The way we do this rigorously. First of all, you have to treat this separation of the Hilbert space into a filtered part and a high-frequency part. So it's kind of like a time filtering process going on. This time averaging process is equivalent to a low bandpass filter. So you are effectively dividing Hilbert space into a low frequency part and a high frequency part. That's kind of like the system and reservoir picture, which is the generic way to describe decoherence processes. And then you can use essentially the same formalism that you have for deriving the master equation for this system. You end up getting a Lindblad equation describing the evolution of the what really is the evolution of the low frequency part, and you assume that the decohering parts of that Lindblad equation are negligible, and then the resultant unitary part of that evolution is just the Hermitian part of the thing that we've derived. It's kind of a complicated thing, which is going to be in this appendix of this long paper that I'm alluding to earlier. But you can see the details there when it's ready. But you're just going to have to take my word for it for the moment. This is a kosher thing to do. So we've got the general expression. The fact that we've got a real averaging process, we assume that this filter function was real valued, allows us to deduce something about these different terms Vs, the different integrals over the interaction Hamiltonians. And at last, we get a relatively general, relatively compact formula for the effective Hamiltonian, or the first two terms in this series that we posited the existence of. Note that this term this expression is independent of the lower term of this integral that we have in these integrals over the interaction Hamiltonian. The lower bottom half is going to factor out. Another point to note, that these overbars are the time averaged, this time averaging process that we've been talking about. We could equally well do it for ensemble averages of random processes. The next, this is not a perturbative theory. Yes, it is a perturbative theory in the way that we derived it. Now we're going to solve the Schrodinger equation with this as the effective Hamiltonian. The result will be something which has all orders of the perturbation parameter lambda in. It's going to be, in effect, a resummation of the full Dyson series with certain select terms included. That's what I was saying there. So we've got that's the one result, which is kind of compact, kind of nice, but in general, which applies in general. But in most of the cases that we're being particularly interested in, we've got time harmonic perturbations going on. This specifically means a a laser, which we assume is a monochromatic, has a monochromatic effect. We can have multiple lasers applying to our system, and each of them is going to have some sort of sub-Hamiltonian H, small h, associated with it, with the different frequencies. And we're assuming that we can write the interaction Hamiltonian as this sort of Fourier series like this. When you do that, you apply the expressions that we derived already, then, and after taking a few various obvious things, like we're assuming that the filtering process is going to be everything that, it's going to exclude everything that's oscillating at the smallest frequency, omega, and everything higher, so that the initial, the zeroth order terms are all going to be zero, the average terms involving just one quantity. So that makes things look a bit more boring on the whole, but it turns out that things start disappearing from the general expression when we calculate these integrals. Again, a whole bunch of terms disappear, and we end up with something which is relatively compact, again, involving these sort of sub-Hamiltonians associated with harmonic terms in the full Hamiltonian. We get an expression which involves the this is called the geometric mean of the two frequencies and the commutator of the two sub-Hamiltonians. That's the generic. That's the prime result. That if you take anything away, this squiggle again should be h bar. That's the main result that I'm talking up in this presentation. Okay, so it was first came across it when I did it in this paper. Related results, there are such things as average Hamiltonians in NMR theory, which is a related idea, doesn't have this same compact formula. There's also Cohen Tanuji, who is the nearest thing there is to a god in the theory of laser atom interactions. He came up with a theory for this using the Schrodinger picture back in the 70s sometime, and it's in his one of his books that he has written. So let's do some examples, show that this is actually a useful formula. Here's the two-level system again with a detuned Hamiltonian. Here's the interaction picture Hamiltonian describing the effect of this harmonic perturbation on this two-level system. We're going to assume that this is the detuned. This detuning is large. This, in effect, is exactly of the form that we're positing for the for our generic term. It's just a simple example of it, and there's only one term in the summation, namely this term. This is the Hamiltonian. Here's the frequency. Applying our formula, we can calculate the commutator of this thing pretty easily, and out jumps the AC Stark shift result in 1, 2, 3 lines, which makes up for the several pages of calculation, which is the standard technique for doing this. So far, so good. It confirmed the results that we had before. Another example. Let's have a three-level system like this. We're going to apply a laser between this level and this level, and between this level and this level. This is a generic sort of system that occurs in quantum optics quite a lot. It's called a lambda system. And there are various detunings associated with these two lasers. Obviously, a direct transition between these two is going to be forbidden by parity selection rules. The Hamiltonian describing this system is just a generalization of the one we had before, now involving two time harmonic terms, which we call H1 and H2. I don't know why it looks like that. It's meant to be nice little curly brackets pointing to the things, but it didn't come out that way. So this is getting more and more... Anyway, when you apply this formalism that we've derived using this is H1, this is H2, and you've got a whole bunch of commutators to calculate. Commutators are relatively easy. It's just a bit of matrix multiplication. When you do that, you get something which is, okay, it's a bit complicated, but when you start recognizing things like these two terms are just AC Stark shifts, which you'd expect from just having this laser interacting with this two-level system, and this laser interacting between this two-level system, just standard AC Stark shifts that we've already derived, then the term left over looks like one of these terms. It's a transition term between S and S prime. That is the Raman transition term. Again, 1, 2, 3 lines derivation of the formula for Raman transitions. Okay, let's do something a little more interesting, a little more unexpected, a little, maybe a little more less familiar. Let's imagine that we've got a two-level system, just two levels, S and D again, referring to internal levels of an ion, and now it's trapped in a harmonic well and has a degree of freedom which allows it to oscillate back and forth in that well. That's described by the quantum operator Z hat. Interaction Hamiltonian is going to involve transition operator between S and D, detuning, but now we've got this extra term which accounts for the fact that this atom or this ion can slosh back and forth. It comes from the phase of the laser, if you want to calculate it all the way through. That sigma Z can be decomposed as a sum of operators involving the different oscillation modes of the, this is what, if there's only one ion here, there's only going to be one harmonic mode of this ion sloshing back and forth. Its motion can be described just as a quantum harmonic oscillator. If we've got multiple ions which are interacting, then we have to describe their motion by a series of coupled normal modes, each of which have A's and A daggers associated with them. And they've got various coupling strengths, which are calculated in this paper of mine of a few years ago. So this is the generic form for an interaction Hamiltonian between an atom and, a trapped ion, which can oscillate in its well, and a laser described by the amplitude capital omega, and also the various frequency and wave vector terms of the laser. They come into the these interaction terms as well. So how are we going to use our formalism to describe this situation? Well, what is a usual approximation to make is what's called the Lamb-Dickey approximation, where we assume that that exponential term can be approximated by just its first two terms of the power series of the exponent. Turns out to be a pretty good approximation most of the time. And then our Hamiltonian reduces to a sum of now three terms. It's just a sum of three harmonic time-varying terms. These are the three. They're called generically the carrier term, the red sideband term, and the blue sideband term, denoted here. Now you've got the all of them involve the transition operators for the internal levels of the ion, but you also have the creation and annihilation operators for the quanta of the motion of the ion cropping up. So when you go and perform our little effective Hamiltonian calculation, doing sharpen your pencils and do a lot of commutation relation calculations, it turns out not that complicated in fact. What you end up is something which is kind of complicated now, but again, it is a, if you look at it, it's just a frequency shift. It's this just moving the two levels closer together in frequency. The frequency shift now is kind of funny in that it involves an operator which is the number operator for the number of excitations of this harmonic mode. That's just called the quantum AC Stark shift. By itself, it's of somewhat academic interest. When you have two ions together, two or more ions together, it turns out to be very useful. Let's do this system with two ions, laser, two internal levels of the atoms again. Again, things get a little bit more complicated. We're making it more and more complicated as time goes by. Again, we follow the same program, making the Lamb-Dickey approximation, identifying a series of time harmonic terms, applying our formula involving the commutation relations. And when we do it in this case, it's kind of convenient to define a collective spin operator involving the two atoms together. When we go through the calculations, we can identify the H1, the H2, and the H3, the time harmonic terms, all of them now involving the J. And we get some commutators that we need to calculate. Quite easy to do if you've done some quantum mechanics. Now there is a new term which wasn't there, involving an anti-commutator when you work things out. It's slightly different than it was before. And that turns out to be quite important, because here is the effective Hamiltonian, again with the AC Stark shifts, the quantum AC Stark shifts, which involve the phonon number. But we've got this two-ion coupling term, which is kind of nice. All we've done here is we're shining a single laser beam on a pair of ions, and and this laser beam is detuned from any resonance so that we can apply this effective Hamiltonian formalism, chug through a few pages of mathematics, and we get this term which involves a coupling between the internal levels of the ion. Note also that it does not, this term in the yellow box, does not involve any term which is dependent on the population of these phonon modes. This term, however, is. But what we could do is apply a second laser beam, which is identical to the first, but has the property that its delta, its detuning, is of opposite sign. So if we've got a red detuned laser, we're also going to apply a blue detuned laser. And if you do that, when you look at it, this term, this whole term, is dependent on the sign of delta. There's a delta squared here, so that doesn't change with the sign. But this one does change with the sign. That's going to become a positive sign when you change the delta. This term doesn't depend on the sign of delta. So when you've got another laser beam of opposite detuning to the first, this term cancels entirely, and you're left with twice this term. And this is a very important result derived by Molnar and Sorensen a few years ago. And it's important because it allows you to perform collective interactions between these two ions that you've illuminated, which are independent of the population of the harmonic well. Practical terms, you can load two ions into a trap. You don't have to cool them right down to their quantum mechanical ground state in order to be able to form quantum gates. It was a very important result, and it enabled all sorts of interesting and fundamental experiments in the past few years to be performed. So, bottom line, here is our time harmonic Hamiltonian. The prime result that I wanted to talk up today was this, that if you have a time averaged version of the dynamics described by this Hamiltonian, you can write it in terms of this effective Hamiltonian given by the commutation relationships of this and the geometric mean of the two frequencies. So that's it. Thank you.